crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Welcome to Pork Therapy.
Yet again.
Yes.
This is Mike.
Mike, the international man of mystery, who has a unparalleled reputation around the world.
Oh, behave.
Yes. And that sort of segues into the topic we're going to be discussing tonight. But you know what?
No.
I think that was like the fastest introduction that we've ever had.
Well, you'd like to think so, but we still haven't said the topic.
That's true. We still haven't said the topic, but I hit on it earlier than normal. Anyway, before we talk about the topic, I would like to let everyone know that you can find us on the web at porktherapy.com, porktherapy.com. You can also hear us on the Liberty Radio Network, lrn.fm. Check them out.
They have a lot of great content on that radio network.
Yes.
A lot of the shows I really like.
That's awesome, Mike. I actually really enjoy LRN, too. I listen to it quite often. And it has us on it, so how could it go wrong? Right?
Right. If it's got us, it's got to be great.
Yes. Anyway.
The joviality in the studio tonight is reaching astounding levels.
It's sky high. Anyway, and we should also say you can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter if you are desirous of getting updates of our every move.
Yeah, you can.
Not
also
really, actually.
We would appreciate it if you went on iTunes and gave us a positive review.
Yes, we like positive. Although, you know,
if you
any
don't like
publicity
us, put that too.
Is good
yeah,
publicity.
Exactly. I guess if we had 50 million negative reviews, that would be noteworthy of some, you know, that would be, hey, we got to listen to this show if everyone hates it.
We got the most negative reviews ever.
Okay, so anyway. I'm still curious. I don't know what we're talking about tonight exactly, and I'm curious how the international man of mystery is going to segue into this.
Well, it was more about your reputation, Mike.
Oh, okay.
And not about your reputation in particular, but about reputation in general.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we do the show Pork Therapy because we're interested in how people free themselves and, you know, solve their problems, relate to others, get along in the context of a free society. And one very important element of that is reputation and sort of information about oneself. You know, it's the age of Googling people,
Aquarius?
Right?
You
know? Oh. Yes, the age of Aquarius too, Mike. Actually, I think it's the dawning of the age
dawning
of
the age of Aquarius. Well, it was in the 60s. Now it's got to be something totally different.
Oh, yeah. It must be like Gemini or something. Anyway. Right. I don't really remember where I was even going with
reputation.
That. Reputation. Yes, reputation. Oh, right. It's the age of Googling people, right?
Mm-hmm.
I saw... I was in the Free Talk Live studio the other night with Meg, one of the activists down in Keene, and she showed me a picture of someone who had done a little bit of art, and it said, I can be Googled, therefore I exist, or something like that. And, I mean, you know, if you think about that statement, it really kind of has some truth to it, right? Everybody's all over the internet, you know, you can Google people, you can find out information on them, you can go to people's Facebook pages, and some people have varying degrees of
hits.
Yeah, I guess you could say varying degrees of popularity, but I was thinking more along the lines of some people are very like restrictive about how they want to control their information. And some people, you know, use aliases or pseudonyms or whatever, or try to anonymize. And some people are very open and very, you know, they basically just don't care or have a very laissez-faire attitude about it. And so, I kind of just wanted to talk about this because it's something I've been thinking about a lot and discussing with other people.
You discuss with other people?
I'm sorry I cheated on you, Mike. I had intellectual intercourse.
Whoa, with another.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, this is a topic of discussion that comes up a lot. It's privacy. You know, we're all liberty activists, and we do believe in reputation, and we believe in the importance of knowing information about people. But as we've done shows about before, where does that cross the line into gossip? And do you own your reputation? Do you how can you control it? I mean,
also, by the way you just said that seemed a little odd. We mm-hmm. you know, people in liberty believe you should know a lot of information about other people. That sounds kind of creepy. Like, it's a, you know, like,
like we're all stalkers.
Yeah, and we know where your social security is, and we know where you hide your gold. No, just we want to know truth. We don't want to know all your details. But if there's something, if you, you know, robbed someone, we want to know about it so we can know how to deal with you.
Yes, exactly. That's more along the lines of what I meant, even though I didn't say it very clearly. I think people who understand the value of reputation. You know, they don't want to look to government to clean up all the criminals because they know that they can't, you know, they know that it's impossible and that people do bad things and treat each other badly and that there's no, amount of government force that can stop that,
right.
You know? And so reputation is valuable as a form of kind of
it's invaluable
gauging whether you should deal with people.
Yeah. In addition to all the, intentional acts, but mm-hmm. accidents happen. So you might accidentally break a contract because of a tornado or, you know, whatever, destroying your car, whatever. But if your reputation shows that you've broken 20 contracts this last year, all accidentally, that reputation is going to reveal something about you.
Yeah, exactly. And so
you're very accident prone.
Yes.
You live in an area with lots of tornadoes. As an aside, have you heard of this thing? There's something called like a, I forget what it's called, but it's basically like a flash tornado, like a mini tornado that can just basically like uproot trees. And like it happens in a very small scale and area.
I did hear about this just recently. Did it happen here in New Hampshire recently?
Yeah, it happened to someone that I know.
Yeah, I think I heard of it and I don't remember what it's called anymore.
Yeah, neither do I. But anyway, that doesn't have any real value to add to what we're talking about. So
I would say it has negative value because now it distracted us.
I'm going to get a bad reputation for just going on tangents. I think
now
I
let's
already
talk about
that.
Can you undo what you just said?
No.
If someone wanted to form a reputation of you based on that, or let's say you did that every show and they formed a reputation of you, can you change their mind?
No, I cannot change their
mind.
That
is what I mean about you don't own your reputation. Your reputation is what other people think about you. It's other people's opinions and thoughts in their own mind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's based, hopefully, on reality and what you do and say and how you act. But if somebody thinks something, you can perhaps try and convince them that they're wrong or show them why they should think something else. But you cannot control what other people think. Your reputation is not your own.
I absolutely agree with that.
Okay.
Because it exists in other people's minds.
Yes.
And what you're saying is totally true. You have no control of what other people think. Mm-hmm. Even if they think something wrong about you, you know?
Right. And that's unfortunate, and you should probably work to correct it.
Sure.
And how would you correct it? You can't just, you know, use an eraser and fix your reputation.
Yeah.
You have to struggle to show them that, no, I don't distract us on every show. See, here's the 57 shows where I didn't. Or maybe this one person who's spreading a rumor or gossip, as we've talked about in another show.
Yeah, you could get to the root of it.
Yeah, you could say, you could look up their reputation and say, you know what, this person has a reputation for spreading incorrect gossip about a number of people, and here's why they're wrong about me or whatever.
Sure.
But you can't just flip a switch because it's not yours.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. But let's go back to something that you said before.
Okay.
Like, there are some people who try to control the reputation, right? Like, for instance, that example we just gave, I went on a tangent in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that I don't want to get a reputation for blathering about stupid stuff in the middle of a serious discussion. And so I want to go back and edit out that segment, right?
Okay.
I could probably do that, right? But if that's really my pattern of behavior, eventually, you know, I'm going to be on video somewhere and I don't control the video, or I'm going to be just interacting with people and they're going to notice that I always go on tangents. So in other words, like, you can try to control what information is out there about you to a certain extent, but also, like, you still have to walk around in life. And if you're really a certain way, I think it's
gonna
inevitably going to come out. Don't you think?
I think so. But it sounds like you're kind of saying you shouldn't try to control information. Like, if if I said something on a show that I didn't, on one of our shows that I didn't like, even if I had a habit of, let's just say swearing, just as a totally hypothetical situation, and I swore on every episode, and for some reason, I wanted to stop having that reputation or stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a problem with trying to control the public, what's publicly known about me by editing the show before it's released.
Yeah, I don't
now,
really
maybe,
see a
maybe,
problem with that
maybe
either.
I can't control my actions, and I'll swear everywhere I go in public.
Right, you know, that in was person. Where I was going next.
Right, right. But, and yeah. then my reputation will be formed on that. But I don't see anything wrong, morally or any other ways, with editing, you know, the podcast to take out the swear words if I don't want them in there.
No.
Okay.
And in that case, you know, you're doing something that's innocuous, basically. No,
right.
no one is harmed by you editing out the swear words.
It just may be ineffectual.
Yeah, it may be, you know, useless or, right. you know, not have much of an effect. But if you're trying to control information out there about you for the purposes of fraud, like, let's say you didn't want people to know that your real name is Geik Marski or something.
I wouldn't want people to know if my name was Geik. Anyway, go on. That's a good one. Go on.
Because
what if you didn't want someone to know that you giggle a lot?
They're gonna know. Because Geik wants to rob a bank or something,
okay.
or rob a convenience store. And
use an alias, is that what you're saying?
Or yeah, or something like that. I don't know. Maybe that's
so
not the best example.
You're talking about controlling what the public sees by using deception.
Yeah, if you're being deceptive, if you're being, there's kind of a difference between...
That's a gray line, I think, actually.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can, there's sometimes where deception, there's no gray line, and you're deceiving something, mm-hmm. someone with intent to deceive them.
Right.
Right? So you could say, I don't know, you could say, oh, hey, Joe, I'm a friend of Fred's, you know, your friend Fred, I'm a friend of his, and
mm-hmm.
he said you'd let me use your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go in there and rob him.
Right.
You don't know him. You don't know Fred. You just happen to know these names. So you're deceiving them to rob him. That's deception.
Right.
That's malicious deception.
And in that case, you're controlling the information.
Right.
That's out there. But, you know, if...
But another kind of deception might even be defensive. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know there's...
Like you don't tell the IRS how much
yeah.
you made or
yeah.
something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Can I go back to a thought that I had about the situation that you said where someone's deceiving someone and saying, hey, I'm your friend's friend. Let me use your phone and
right.
go into your house and rob you. But you don't tell them you're going to rob them,
right.
obviously. But but so what you're doing is you are putting information out there, but they have the counter ability to call their friend Joe and say, hey, you know, this guy Geik that
yeah.
came to my door, is he actually really your friend?
Right.
Because I've never seen him before. I mean, it's a little bit odd that he would just ask to use my phone.
Okay.
You know?
That's true. What's the point here?
The point is that even if someone does put fraudulent information out there or omit information or whatever for the purposes of, you know, doing something malicious...
Uh-huh.
The fact that other information is out there that can counteract that
mm-hmm.
bad information is good. It's like a defense mechanism. And so, it goes back to like the fact that it's very difficult to control information, right?
It's very difficult to control information. I kind of get it feels like you're implying that
the
onus... No, the onus is on the victim to protect themselves from deception. And I don't think you're saying that, and I don't agree with that. I think you're just saying that if someone is deceiving you, it's possible to find out. Sometimes.
I am. I'm saying basically information can be a double-edged sword. You know?
You don't believe that it's buyer beware to a large extent? Because if you're talking about right now, you're just talking about on a personal level. But if you're moving out into propaganda and spin doctors, I mean, you have to accept the responsibility of not just believing the first thing you heard and researching and delving into it and finding out for sure.
Well, okay. I do agree with that. So I don't know what I'm trying to say. There's somewhere in the middle that I'm kind of falling in. I don't know where that is because if...
So Mike, before you said that
uh-huh.
you didn't think it was the victim's onus or responsibility to find out when someone is deceiving them?
No, I guess I said that, but that's not really what I mean because...
Well,
like our peanut gallery just said, it certainly is. Everyone is responsible for acting on their own information.
Yes.
Are
you saying that I think I kind of know what you're saying. I think you're probably saying that the person who is deceiving is doing wrong.
Yeah.
And so it's they're morally culpable, right?
Right.
It's, you shouldn't blame the victim for...
Right. I guess that's what I'm saying. It's not the victim's fault, even though they should be more careful with what they do. You know, if they're if they're going to let a stranger into their house, they should check if it's a friend of Geik's or whatever.
But still, somebody... No, Geik is the friend of Joe.
Oh, wow, whatever. Or was it Fred? I thought I was Joe.
I don't know. Never mind. But no, I completely lost my train of thought. I think you're saying that even if someone is trying to deliberately deceive someone else to like, for the purposes of wronging them...
Yeah.
And the person should be careful and should beware. They're still having some aggression done to them.
Yes.
And, you know, someone's committing fraud or force or whatever on them. And so...
So how do we bring this back to controlling information?
Well, I think, you know...
You're saying you can't control information.
I have come to the conclusion that it's almost impossible, if not very, very difficult, to control information. And that kind of goes back to privacy. If you want privacy, you kind of have to work at it, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Especially with all the technology that's out there now. Both, both, you know, toys that you might want to use and tools that that people who want to learn about you might have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading a second, but I read a first book very recently on privacy. The first one I read was called How to Be Invisible by J.J. Luna. And the one I'm reading now is One Nation Under Surveillance by Boston Tea Party.
Not their real names.
Yeah, almost, no, certainly not their real names. But besides all the details of how to remain private or how to best remain private, what I got out of both of these books is that it's remarkably difficult. You have to jump through so many hoops in everyday aspects of your life in order to truly remain private, or at least to best achieve it in this world. You can't really remain completely private, but to achieve it to the best that is possible, it takes a lot of effort. So,
going back to earlier, I think that most fraud could be eliminated completely if people did take the time and make the effort to do their own due diligence. But the fact of the matter is that there's only so much time in a day. And if you did due diligence on everything, you just spend your whole life
doing due diligence.
And so there comes a point where you have to take certain things at face value, and that's why propaganda is effective, and that's why fraud exists.
Now, you're right, and there comes a point, it's kind of like division of labor. There comes a point where you can't research every little piece of information that you hear every day and determine if it's true, and so you a human being starts to trust other human beings. Well, you know what? When I'm 6 years old, you know what? Pretty much everything my mom tells me is true. And my friend across the street, sometimes he lies to me. So you start to trust some people more than others. And as adults, you know, a lot of the things that I read in, and this is an example, this is only an example. A lot of the things I read in Consumer Reports, I trust. But a lot of the things I read in National Enquirer, not so much. National Geographic, I trust.
Really, indigenous peoples all over the world.
So my point is,
big piercings and stuff.
That's kind of like... it's kind of like an efficiency way. You're kind of cheating. You don't have to do due diligence on everything. If, for example, someone that you trust researched this matter and you just say, oh, you know what? They said I trust it. I don't have to do weeks of research on this one issue.
Yeah, you're outsourcing that research.
Right. And then the matter is, well, how do I trust them? And do I trust them all the time? And so you're losing some of your due diligence, essentially. You're losing some of the truth value. It's just getting lost in the cracks because you're shuffling it off and you're trusting fewer people for more things because we have to in order to live.
There's that reputation rating system.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, when you said that, Mike, basically about outsourcing research and due diligence to third parties instead of doing it all yourself, I mean, it makes sense, but I think some people apply that concept maybe wrongly and trust the government and just believe whatever they say, especially things like
Is that applying the concept wrongly, or is that just making a bad choice in who to trust because of all the propaganda?
Oh, that's just making a bad choice of how to trust.
Okay. In fact, they've been indoctrinated to trust the government. The propaganda they've learned is we are a trustworthy source.
And they believe
from the
they're indoctrinators, right?
Right.
Which was
right.
the schools.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
Sad.
Well, I mean, the example I'm thinking of is like, you know, people generally think of like the FDA as keeping them safe from like food scares, you know, like salmonella or in the eggs or like peanut butter or right. spinach or whatever, E. coli in the spinach. But I mean, you really can't trust them to do like the amount of food production is so vast, and they have such an inefficient bureaucracy, and it's funded by force, and it's like there are so many factors. How could you possibly trust the government to keep you safe in that instance? But yet people do, and I wonder if it's just like intellectual laziness that causes like I want to trust them, so therefore I will, or if they actually think that the government is like doing a good job, you know?
Well, that's almost a different topic, why people would choose to trust the government over a private company or a person. That's almost a different topic.
Yeah.
I agree with you that it's a horrible source of truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a source of truth.
Yeah. what can we say about, you know, privacy and managing information? I think what I've
It's hard to say. I think it's very subjective. Everyone has their own approach, and I think the gentleman in the peanut gallery and mine approaches are probably very different. Before I moved to New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project, for years I had a website with where I'd put everything about me because I just loved this use of technology. I would put a map to my house using Google Maps because I love Google Maps, mm-hmm. and I had a calendar because I love that technology, and it showed when I was out of town. And I wow. had a webcam that was on 24 hours at my desk, not all over my
wow.
house, but at my desk. And actually, I met a girlfriend that way, and we were together for years. So,
wow.
Yeah, but I loved putting everything about me out there. I just loved that.
Hmm.
I absolutely hate it now. Hmm. But now I'm only slightly different. I use my real name I use my government name all over the place. I don't really hide that I don't pay taxes. I don't like the government. I don't really hide it, but I'm also not flaunting any of that information anymore. No more website with my address on it. No mm-hmm. more webcam, and no, none of that.
Sorry.
I was pretty much the exact opposite up until, and to a large degree, the privacy is still important to me to the extent that I can have it. But, and some of it had to do with upbringing. But the fact of the matter is that I never had a checking account. I never had a credit card. I never got a lease in my name.
Hmm.
I never by got choice. A call on by choice.
But I'm sorry, by choice, by privacy. Not,
right.
yeah.
Yes,
see, I didn't even think about this when I was younger.
All of those things.
Yeah.
And then I got here and that changed. So.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, not all of it.
Some of it.
I still don't, I don't think that most people still know when my birthday is. And I don't celebrate birthdays. So, I keep that kind of thing just off the radar pretty much.
Right.
But
and I tell people my birthday, although because I like my friend, well, because I think birthdays are one of the few holidays I enjoy. It celebrates the birth of people I like. But I don't tell anyone my real year of birth anymore because that's information that can help them steal my ID and use it fraudulently or hurt me or something. So
well,
I'm slightly changing, but not
another
enough.
Another take on that is there's a website where a gentleman has put forward the theory that if everyone made all of their information public, that would really obstruct government functioning, i.e. they couldn't claim it. If I put out my
social security number
and birthday and all that information on the internet, they couldn't claim that any transaction was mine, because I can say, well, anybody can do it. That information's out there.
That's interesting.
Couldn't scam anybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he's actually trying to get more people
to do it,
publish all of their information, and thereby
basically
mess up their databases.
I bet everyone's saying you first.
I imagine so. I think he has a few dozen people.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, Mike, what you were saying before was that, you know, you used to have this website with everything about you, and
right.
it made it really easy to stalk you and everything.
And yet no one did, because I was nobody, but go on.
And now you've kind of changed your approach. Like, you don't hide that information, but you don't go out of your way to make it public, right? And I just wonder, is that motivated by a change in attitude? Like, hey, I'm not scared of them, but, I mean, I just wonder What made you change your mind?
I don't really know. When I was broadcasting myself, I didn't really even understand the ideas of liberty yet, let alone stand up to government and non-cooperate with cops. And right now I could have a warrant for my arrest, and mm-hmm. they want me for a number of reasons, and they'll want me for more in the near future. So, now that they do want me, I'm not so anxious for them to know exactly where I am all the time. So mm-hmm. maybe that's why I'm keeping some of it private. And reading these books, there's a lot more hoops to jump through than I want to do right now to really get to really anonymize myself.
Yeah.
But maybe in the next year or five, I may want to do more of these hoops.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard. You have to be really vigilant. Everyday simple tasks, you have to jump through numerous hoops to do. Like, if you want a landline in your house, which you shouldn't do, but if you wanted a landline, you know what? One of the rules in J.J. Luna's book is no one should ever know your home address.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about using ghost addresses, and you can look up his book and find out what he means. But how hard is that one fact alone?
Really hard, yeah.
Really hard. You have to jump through so many hoops and change so many habits just to do that.
Yeah. And yet, you can never have a guest over to your house.
Yeah, you have to blindfold him. No. it's really weird. So in terms of controlling information, it's just too much work for me to want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I'm doing it more now than I did earlier, so maybe I'll do it even more in the future. I don't know.
Yeah, although what you described to me doesn't sound like you're controlling the information. You're just not going out of your way to make it available. You know, you're not hiding it. I would think of hiding it as controlling it.
Okay, well, I think a lot of the steps in these books are hiding information. Mm-hmm. Hiding your phone number and your cell number and your address and your age and where you're at and what kind of car you drive, because that might indicate how much income you have.
Right.
There's a lot of hiding of information that they try and do. So I think in order to remain private, you have to try to control information. Mm-hmm. And you say, and I kind of agree, that you really can't. You can't control all the information. That's why I said...
Not without a lot of effort, anyway. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's possible.
Yeah.
And I think both of these authors, although I haven't finished the Boston Tea Party book, say that you can't be completely anonymous. But the closest you can come is if you do this, 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 and this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I agree. You cannot control all information, but you can do your best effort to make it really hard to find something out.
Mm-hmm. And getting, coming full circle to what we talked about at the beginning of the show, which was reputation, I think really the only way to have a good reputation is to be a good person, don't you think? I think it's really, really difficult to fake a reputation.
I think
because it's what other people think of you.
Right, and if you're discovered cheating or lying or faking a reputation or doing something bad and hiding it or whatever, that's going to get out and ruin your reputation. That
Absolutely.
Will become your reputation.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting, though, that in a free society, reputation would be immensely important. And yet in this society, and in fact, right, in this society, reputation is immensely important too. Mm-hmm. Look at credit reports and all that stuff.
eBay ratings.
But anonymity is so sought after because what? Government, I guess? Why is anonymity so important in this culture?
Well, because of fraud too. Because I think one thing people are concerned about is identity theft, which, is... kind of made possible by this whole credit card system and social security numbers. And by the way, the government sold social security numbers as something that would never be used for identification purposes.
And now it's
ubiquitous. Yeah.
By government.
Isn't it funny?
I think you have to have a social security number on your driver's license, don't you? I mean,
in some states you do.
You don't have to? Oh.
Yeah. No, you don't. In New Hampshire, I think you have to have one, but not show it
on the license. Right. They have to have it in their records. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Now, there's a slight chance that you were born and brought through the system without ever having received a social security number, and they probably have a procedure in place for that.
Mm-hmm.
You mean the peanut gallery is shaking?
No. I was with somebody at the DMV that tried to go through without a driver's license, and she was not.
You mean without Social Security?
Social Security, sorry.
They used to be.
At this point, even in New Hampshire, the Live Free or Die state, if you do not have legitimately by their system, do not have a Social Security number, they will not give you a driver's license.
They would not give you a driver's license.
No. Yeah, this is not a free world.
It's not a free world because you. Supposedly have to have a license to drive.
Permission to drive, and then you have to have their ID that's not ID in order to get a license, and you have to have this number assigned to you at birth. And
yeah. I mean, I can get in a car and drive regardless of whether I have a piece of paper or not.
And I do every day.
Do you?
Yeah, I am. They suspended my registration and my license, so for months now I've been driving without.
Well, clearly, I mean, clearly those laws aren't stopping you, so.
Well, they're not, and clearly a jail cell will stop me in the next couple weeks or months or whatever. Sooner or later, someone's going to pull me over, and then they'll jail me.
Having that piece of paper isn't making you a better driver or
not. Not safer, not.
It's just jumping better, through
their hoops. Right. So, reputation.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've said everything that we can say about it. I mean,
okay.
So, yeah, I don't really have any closing thoughts, but my conclusions from this episode are just that, one, it's very difficult to control information. Two, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to be private or anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Three, the only way to have a really good reputation is to be a good person and to be honest. And I guess that's pretty much all I have to say. What about you, Mike?
I think that's it, but we kind of talked about the disparity between how important reputations are and yet how you can't control them.
Yeah.
And we didn't really go into that. We just mentioned it. And I guess there's really nothing more to say. You said be a good person and you'll have a good reputation, or, you know, in any aspect of your life, if you want a good reputation for financially, you always pay your debts and you're responsible with money, then be a quote good unquote person in regards to money. Handle your money better. Don't renege on your obligations, your financial obligations, and always go into debt and lose your money and all this stuff, and then try and fake a reputation by making excuses and telling people that your reputation will become that you make excuses for why you handle money poorly, right?
Right.
The only way to is that what you're saying? The only way to have a good reputation in any specific area is to
live it.
Live it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying take care of the means and then the ends will take care of themselves, basically. Yeah.
How do you account with that theory for some politicians who have a great reputation with a large number of people, even though it's clear that they're lying scumbags?
Well, that's interesting because I see what you're saying and I agree, but do they really have a good reputation, or do they have a large following who are going to vote for them despite them being jerks and liars anyway, and fraudulent?
A couple of our last presidents, people love them, and in spite of all the evidence to the contrary, in spite of them lying, you can show them video. He said it, then he said something different.
You're right.
He
I've seen it. Those videos he on did YouTube. Something different. Yeah.
He said it. He lied. Oh, I love him.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, those people, I guess, maybe, for better or for worse, are buying into the propaganda, and they're not really.
Yeah. Are we talking about something other than reputation at this point? Like, his reputation, all right, despite whatever his reputation is, you're showing facts. You should be changing his reputation. You're saying,
and it's not.
And it's not. So are we leaving the realm of reputation and going into idolatry, maybe, or some other facet?
Well, because I don't know.
It just seems that that's a hole in the reputation scenario that can clearly be exploited because it is being exploited.
That's true. I mean, O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
I think the reputation would have to do with his peers more, the presidency or whoever. I'm sure that his peers are like, yeah, he's got a good reputation because he does da-da-da-da-da. The general sheeple public might think that he's okay just because they don't know anything.
Yeah, maybe it does have to do with indoctrination and, like what we talked about before, they have to trust someone because they can't do all the due diligence and they just pick someone poorly.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Mike, and I also think that the only thing you can control is your own opinions and your own thoughts. And so if you see a person, an average Joe or whatever, who thinks this lying politician is great just because the politician is charismatic, well, that's going to affect your perception of average Joe as well as the politician, because you'll know that the politician is lying and, hey, this guy still trusts him and thinks he's awesome. And so now you have a negative sort of, it's a little strike against both of them in your mind. And so, yeah, I just think that's information too. It's just kind of two levels. Does that make any sense?
It does make sense. I just, I guess this does feel like a kind of a hole in the reputation system. It's, if your reputation is so important, and yet it could be not abused, but worked around so easily, that's pretty important, right? I mean, if you're famous, if you get a lot of people, If you, let's say you're a really good person and you have a great reputation and you're actually good, you live it, and then all of a sudden you murder someone, who's going to believe it? Because you have an excellent reputation.
Hmm.
Who's going to believe it?
But how likely is that? I mean,
well, yeah. Maybe not murder someone. Maybe you just borrowed $10 and never paid it back. Who's going to believe that? You've always paid back your debts. Who's going to believe it?
Mm-hmm. Well, so, yeah, maybe, reputation has maybe its faults. The first time it happens, nobody's going to believe it.
Then if it happens
but
20
if it keeps
times,
happening,
yeah.
No? Then it
if,
will.
If you murder 20 people, then they'll start to listen.
We hope that never happens. But, no. But, you know, that's why we have a friend who says that gossip is vital in a free society. I don't know if I completely agree with that, but it is information.
Yeah.
Information can't be controlled. You know, it's basically information about other people's behavior. And if people don't propagate that information, not everyone's going to know.
But I think gossip may often be false or,
yeah, that's true.
Or malicious. Inflammatory or dramatic.
And
or,
that's why you have to consider the source.
And then you could also make a reputation about the gossiper.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, I think we've blathered about this enough. Okay. I'm starting to feel a little tongue-tied.
Thanks for your input today, guys.
Yeah, thanks for... Thank the peanuts.
Thanks for having the peanuts.
We're tasty and salty.
Salty.
Yay.
This has been Mike.
And Stephanie, and thank you for listening.
Yeah, where can they, if you want to learn more about us or hear all our past episodes, you can go to porktherapy.com on the website.
On the website?
On the internet.
On the web.
On the web, interwebs.
That's how you can tell we've been talking too much tonight.
That's another way.
Messing up the internets. Anyway, they're hard to screw up, but we somehow managed to do it. Yes, email us questions at porktherapy.com if you want to talk about your questions about reputation, privacy, gossip, anything that is under the sun.
Or call us at area code 419-PT-LOVE-4.
Yes. Or Google us, Pork Therapy, with a
you
C.
You can find out all about us.
P-O-R-C Therapy.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Or goodbye.
Bye. They're two crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench. Cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork Therapy. Advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4.